What's going on, y'all? Welcome to the Chain Reaction Podcast. I am your host, Jeremiah Mitchell, joined today by our very hairy friend, Mr. Jeremiah Harding. What's up, man? How are you?
Well, I have the well-rested perk because, like, okay, so I stayed up till 10 last night, which is much earlier than I normally fucking go to sleep. But,
right.
But I thought that I could stay asleep and I couldn't. So I fucking woke up at like 1-ish and started to play phone games and didn't get to sleep until like 2:30. And so I basically, because I thought that it would tire me out enough to sleep, and it did, but only after like getting me wired to do like a fucking phone game. So it didn't actually help in the direction that I was hoping it did. I just needed to like breathe or something. But
yeah.
I woke up at 12, so like I have 2 hours of energy. I understand you don't, though.
No, I don't. I've been getting, it was like 3 months ago when I was so grateful that I hadn't been sick in forever. And I was thinking, man, I can't even remember the last time I've been sick. And now I've been sick twice in the last few months, which I'm sure it's just a coincidence, but it happens to come soon after I started smoking again over my recent illnesses. But there's no way that smoking has a negative effect on the immune system, right? No.
Well, yeah. Neither does having a kid.
Neither does having a kid. Yeah, even when I was exhausted with him, though, I still wasn't sick. I was just super fucking tired. I couldn't think. I would have rather been sick, probably, depending on the illness. But yeah, your sleep schedule sounds a little bit like my son's, or at least what you did last night. He goes to sleep at 10, and we think, oh, this is probably a nap. And it was. He slept from like 9:30 till like 11:15, and then he was up until about 12:30. So not that far off from your schedule.
Yeah, well, and I really did, like, I was fucking tired because last night I got called a fed by this guy on Twitter because I didn't fucking agree with him and his particular approach to whatever. You know, maybe I'll talk about that a little bit later, but, you know, as I understand, you've got, part of the evidence of Stefan Molyneux's slip into nationalism.
I do. I just realized you are not actually going to be able to see the video, which I forgot that that's a thing we can't do, you know, cause it'll just be on
fine.
The stream. But yeah, I think, FYI, I think today's going to be a little bit shorter of an episode so I can spend time laying on the ground in misery instead of doing a podcast in misery. But yeah, so I saw a video every once in a while. I was linked to it by a friend. I think it's Brian Boring on Google+. I can't remember who posted it because I don't normally watch Stefan Molyneux videos anymore. But he used to be pretty influential in my philosophy and reasoning, and was someone whose videos I would share periodically and whose ideas I would share periodically because I thought that they were important and worthwhile. And if you look back at some of his old videos, they actually still are. But I'm very hesitant about ever pointing anyone to them these days, and I doubt that I will. And this video is Exhibit A, and I'm hoping that Harding remembers enough that we can talk about it a little bit. So here you go. Let me just transition into this real quick.
I want to share why I was wrong and what I was wrong about. And this is, I'm going to cite some data in this. I decided not to do a PowerPoint. I thought a conversation would be better. I really look forward to your feedback. I'll put the links to the data-driven presentations I've done on all of this material below. So in the past, I had great scorn for borders, imaginary lines, and so on. And although I also said that if you have a welfare state, you have to have borders, in the same way that if you have something of great value, you need to build something around it to keep it safe. And so I do, you know, understand that sort of recognize that I had that in the past. But the nation state is something that I have grown much more comfortable with and even admiring of. And of course, the nation state must be evaluated not next to some paradise, but compared to this sort of globalism, open borders, mass migration, the welfare state being preyed upon by people from other countries, other cultures, other religions, other hemispheres. And so the nation state compared to what is always the philosophical question. You know, someone, it's an apocryphal story, I think, but someone went up to a philosophy professor once and said, "How's your wife?" And he said, "Compared to what?" And that, of course, is always the essential question, compared to what? Is the nation state preferable to globalism? Is it something that is more sustainable than globalism? Is it a pocket where freedom can exist, which globalism will undermine and destroy? We'd all love to live.
All right, I think that's all I want to show. Let me transition our video back. Harding, can you move around? I want to see if you're still moving. You're not. Do you want to connect or disconnect and reconnect? If you're still there.
I'm still here.
I got it moving. I think I got it moving again. Nope. It might just be OS. OSB effing up. If I go to your Skype, then it looks like you're moving. Okay, I think we're good now. Sorry, audio listeners, or you're welcome. So I don't know how much you remember from that video, but he talks about how he used to be against borders, calling them imaginary lines and whatnot, and used to be very critical of the nation state. But now, as he gets older and has a child and learns about IQ, sees the world for what it truly is, then now he sees the nation state as something that is admirable and preferable to globalism, and a place where people can have pockets of freedom away from the immigrants, essentially. That's what his argument is. And to be fair, I just played the intro to his video, and he has arguments further on in the video, and I'm not trying to say that these are his only arguments or mischaracterize them. I'm not even going to get into them, but he hits on some really interesting and what to me is a really stupid thing. He talks about there being this choice between having in this world that we live in, you know, because we're dealing with reality now, between the nation state and globalism, as if that is a binary to choose. But the flaw in his logic goes far deeper than that. It's not very evidence-based. Now, what or who or which organization, organizations are the cause of globalism? Which organizations are creating a giant migrant crisis? Which organizations are destroying mass portions of the world and homes and economies and any sort of stability that they had, and making people really pissed off and helping to exacerbate violent pockets in a culture and expand them? And really, when you do violence to a culture over decades, they do tend to get more violent, and they do tend to get more, have more hatred in their heart toward the people and the culture, because they're burdened by collectivist thinking as well that is doing this to them, that is causing these problems. But he points to the nation state as the solution to globalism. I'm going to keep ranting, Harding, so if you want to interrupt me, please do. If you'd like to comment on anything I said right now. No, we good?
I'm keeping mental notes.
Okay.
Once you're done, I'll give my rant on this.
Okay, I have no idea what I'm done, so if you hear a long pause, just jump right in. Who created the UN? Who started World War I, World War II? Who's creating the NATO alliance? Who is participating in all this economic exclusionism and making these various agreements, global agreements with one another? Who formed the EU? It wasn't a bunch of free individuals. It wasn't a bunch of free people acting. It was a bunch of nation states. They are the cause of globalism. They are the mechanism by which globalism exists in our world. And I mean, we could go through example after example. I'm hoping Harding has more to add on that. But think about how stupid what he said was about having a nation state that is a pocket of freedom in a world of tyranny, which was essentially what he said. A nation state is a pocket of tyranny over the people within that region. That's what nation states are. Tyranny is the initiation of force on peaceful people in order to exercise ownership over their body, property, and relationships. And all nation states exist through that behavior. Yeah, you can make some that start out a little smaller than others and have a little less of that at first. But as we all know, as Steph has argued quite well in the past, the more free your nation state, the more successful it will be economically, and the more parasites it will attract, and the larger government will grow in that area. And if you start out by creating a mechanism that makes has like a perceived legitimacy, or makes aggression legal, that will be used as to violate the freedom of others. Go, Ninja.
Yeah, well, and like, so let's say you create this pocket of freedom, but you don't have a citizenship that respects that pocket of freedom. Let's say, you know, allowing for this sliding scale of freedom bullshit, which is total bullshit. You know, the economic freedom index and the freedom indexes in general are just ways for one country to brag about how much more they have and not discuss where they got it from. But beyond that, like, let's say you have this pocket of freedom, but you don't have an informed people being the people that operate it, being the people that live there and vote their freedom in. Let's say you got that. Well, those people will inevitably breed, and they'll inevitably stop thinking about shit because they have a government to delegate all their responsibilities to, which is what it's really for. And they'll eventually get to the point where they're so comfortable they don't give a shit what society looks like. Because that's what we have now. The U.S. was theoretically a pocket of freedom at one point,
yes,
by Steph's standards, even though it fucking wasn't. And by any standards, it still existed as a British colony, which is why they quashed tax rebellions. You know, but beyond that, the U.S. was a pocket of freedom, and now we have this. So the argument shouldn't be between, you know, nationalism and globalism, because that ignores the very real possibility that both of those are necessarily concurrent. Because
you can't even have globalism without nationalism. It's really stupid. I mean, it can't exist without the other.
I'm saying, like, you can't really have the other without the other either.
Yeah.
Because realistically, nationalism will always turn into business meetings, and those business meetings will try to find ways which, you know, all parties involved still get, like, the most benefit from the transactions and interactions that they have. So, you know, if you start to look at things, you know, not as benevolent institutions doing the will of the people, if you start to look at these states as corporations and businesses working for the elites, then it becomes much clearer where globalism came from. It came from a desire to merge businesses for better access to the tax farm, and to merge business business interests and to merge business interests in the interest of reducing friction during transactional periods. And that's exactly like, and the protectionism, the only reason anybody gives a fuck about North Korea is because North Korea happens to be one of the countries that theoretically didn't do what the U.S. government wanted them to do, so they're sanctioned the fuck out. And so North Korea has to be isolationist and protectionist with their culture and shit, and it's because the U.S. government decided not to include them in their board meetings. And that's exactly how all business works. And so to make the determination that, hey, after all of these years of this not working, for anything other than the interests of wealthy families that go back much, much further, I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to ignore the things that have been built before I was born. And I'm going to say that it's admirable to have a nation state because at least it's preferable to globalism, ignoring the fact that globalism was built from nations and states and nation states that were built on the backs of slaves and huge amounts of corruption and fucking ruling families and very, very concentrated wealth that was handed down from generation to generation with symbology and fucking Bilderberg group shit.
And
that's
brought about
not,
by state collusion.
You know, fun to talk about.
Yeah.
But that's not fun to talk about. It's much more fun to say why I was wrong and humble brag about why I'm right now. You know, fucking... It's like,
yeah,
it's,
well,
pander to
the new audience that he's gaining is really what it's
right.
all about. I think, or as I believe someone in chat mentioned, it could be just lingering effects, latent effects of that brain tumor he had. Maybe it's come back. Maybe we're yeah. diagnosing him. The cancer is no longer in remission. It has gone full force over the last couple of years, all over that brain of his. Seriously, I do not wish him to die of brain cancer, but I don't know where his brain went in some ways, you know, because he used to talk so reasonably, in my opinion, and now he's ignoring, as we've been saying, ignoring the last globalism's been happening in increasing measure for many centuries. But if you look at the last century, the rapid rate of its, yeah, you're right, for millennia, the rapid rate over the last century is insane. And what it sounds like, what it appears to be, and again, I don't watch everything Steph puts out, and I'm not really interested in just going through and critiquing his videos all the time. He still puts out some worthwhile stuff to listen to, probably, but just on principle, not interested. So I'm not familiar with all of his arguments, but it does seem like he's ignoring the last century of nation-state enabled a nation state driven globalism. Like, he just pretends it doesn't exist. And the migrant crisis that exists, it's very, very real and it's very, very tragic. And so much of it is driven by the foreign policy of a bunch of white people, really, if you want to make it racial, if you want to talk about the goodness or badness of different races, as he goes on in the video to talk about how white men are for a smaller government. Yeah, and they're also for creating massive migrant crises in Syria.
Everybody's
and in Libya and Somalia, Yemen,
right,
Iraq.
Everybody's about smaller government until that affects their bottom line. Then they're not for, you know,
yeah.
Fucking...
well, I'm still for smaller government, smaller regardless of my bottom line.
Well, right.
I know what you're saying.
But the idea of anybody in the modern day being for smaller government, who isn't for no government, is absurd, because the idea of government is to grow. It's to grow with the people and sometimes outpace them. And, you know, in doing so, govern the area, be the centralized force that people want. You know, that people claim we couldn't have roads and schools and infrastructure and fucking health clinics and fucking police forces without. And then, you know, everybody wants the government to shrink to their preferred size, but nobody can agree what that size is. You know, talk to two leftists. One of them wants universal gun bans. How will you do that? Oh, well, you'll talk to the cops. And one of them wants to arm the homeless. Oh, well, how will you do that? Oh, well, I guess we'll have to go against the system. Well, gee, you should have thought of that before you empowered it. You know, and then the right is all about fucking, you know, pro-sex. And I'm just using guns because it's easy.
Yeah.
But then the right is all about, you know, yeah, we should definitely have guns and, you know, pro-2A. But then it comes down to it, and they think that there should be regulations on arms, and they think that only the government should have access to certain arms. And why is that? Oh, well, because we trust the government fundamentally. So like I said, everybody's for small government until it's time to do small government things. And realistically, the smallest governments will always grow to be the largest because they were started under the principle of doing what's right, you know, following the people's will. And then once the people get comfortable with that, they can grow immeasurably because guess what? The people will think it's in their interest whenever shit the government does goes wrong. They'll just think, oh yeah, well, you know, it's the government. You got to accept a few bad things in order to get the good. So, you know, I mean, this whole argument ignores, you know, millennia of political, you know, doings, and it ignores the fact that people fundamentally don't give a shit about any of it. You know, so we need a fundamental revolution of consciousness before any revolution will work. But then just moving back to the unconscious fucking delegation of responsibility that is government, that's not going to change jack fucking shit. And it might end up worse than this pocket of freedom turned out to be. So fuck that. Fuck all that.
Yeah. And also, one other thing he said in the video that I wanted to remark on in this brief time is he said compared to what, you know, one of the basic elements, you know, of philosophy is what you're comparing A to, you know, and he talks about the nation state being preferable to globalism, again, as if there are two really distinct things unrelated to one another, or as if the nation state
flip, not a
but
nice he,
even taking that as a given being true, that the nation state, that there's a kind of nation state you can create that will prevent globalism, he talks about free market anarchism, anarcho-capitalism, as if it's some sort of utopian dream that can only, you know, be realized through minarchism and through the creation of this pocket of freedom nation state, or by bringing a nation state back to freedom, as if the realistic option is to make a government more free, to shrink down a government so that it forms a minarchist state, or to form a minarchist state, as if that's like the real thinker's option, the realistic way that we can create a more free society, which is something that has never worked, and the only minarchist states that have been created have grown. I guess Liechtenstein might be a bit of a disproving of my thought. So maybe it sort of worked a little bit in one case, but going away from that, that's more utopian in my view, far more utopian than the notion of an anarcho-capitalist world, is that you're going to find a way to get together with people and create a brand new, I don't really know what he's thinking. If he's thinking we're going to create, because I didn't look through the entire video, just like not 80% of it. I doubt he has an answer though. The notion that you're going to get together with people and create a free nation state is absurd. And the notion that you're going to convince a nation state like Canada or the US to shrink down to size, whatever his minarchist state would look like on the road to anarchism, because I think he still does claim to want anarchy at some point in the future. He just thinks minarchy is the way to get there. But he's clueless about that actually being a legitimate means or a realistic means at all. In order to move in that direction.
See, it's not a viable solution because basically people don't want the government shrunk. Most people don't want the government shrunk. That's a point that I stress on Moment of Rage, which, you know, y'all can catch that on Journalistic Revolution and IPM Nation on Wednesdays. But you know, people don't want the government to shrink. They want it to grow into their particular notion of what it should be. That's what they want. And so to ignore that, or to say that, you know, to have a solution that doesn't really consider that, that's, I mean, it ignores millennia of cultural precedent. It ignores biological evolution in terms of, like, people being tribalistic. It ignores how everything has developed, and he's calling us utopian. We don't want to shrink the state to a manageable size, because anarchists don't believe that the state has a manageable size, or we wouldn't care if it did, because it's still fundamentally evil. But
yeah,
like, beyond that,
state always has a manageable size, and it's always manageable by those in power in order to get more power and more money.
But beyond that, like, you know, if you're gonna ignore culture, you might as well destroy it while you're there and fucking start over. I can respect any counterculture over somebody who claims that they can put the reins on it much more. Much more. Because if you're trying to put the reins on culture, you're basically saying that I know how to control billions of people. I know how to make these billions of people go counter to what they regularly do and what they've regularly done and what they've been indoctrinated to do and to have done without removing the structure that has allowed them to flit about in fucking, you know, this limbo of, oh, well, we definitely need one, but I don't like that it did that, you know?
Yeah.
This, well, delegation I think of responsibility bullshit.
His argument's a bit different than that, because he doesn't argue about changing the culture of billions of people.
No, but you're going to need to, is what I'm saying.
Well, his argument, you know, is, no, all you need to do, Mr. Harding, is get all the white men together who like small government and then form a nation with all the white men. I think
that's the change of culture, though, because right now most white men don't want that to happen.
Well, I think he does link to some evidence otherwise based on Pew research. I would get, in my experience, I would guess on average, white men do favor smaller government than a lot of other categories of people, at least in the US, and at least in principle, that's what they would say.
I mean, maybe, and then maybe like 59% of them are strong fist allies. Talking about the modern day,
strong allies? You cut out a little there.
Feminist allies. But we're talking about the modern day, where it's much more preferable in a lot of ways, you know, to use his fucking verbiage. You know, it's much preferable to just go along with the system and try to be woke bae of 2019 than it is to, you know, give a shit about the size of government, because how heartless could you be? And how easily can I sneak my way into this woman's pants who's also woke, you know? Or how can I also do well at this university or college system? This generation is cranking out a huge amount of fuck babies, and all these fuck babies are going to grow up thinking that it's not cool to have privilege, and that if you do, you've got to check it and run counter to it. And those people aren't the people who are going to band together as white men for small government. Not that it'd be preferable anyway, because, hey, a race society? Yeah, let's run that. Let's see how that runs when the race-based societies start to unite based on that and start to have, you know, some sort of war, like maybe a race one.
It's just such a... What a stupid thing to find unity in. Also, FYI, I spilled a bunch of coffee on myself. I don't know if people watching on video caught that, but just so you know, I'm aware. It happens. I thought you were going to go a different direction with it when you started talking about white men wanting larger government. And I really hate talking about people as white men and talking about a category of people as white men. But that's what, if you talk about Stefan Molyneux and his present ideology, sometimes you gotta kind of get in, you know, this categorizing mindset. Plus, I'm sick, so I'm going to do it a little bit. So in my sort of culture, the region I'm in, the relationships I have with penis melanin disabled males, or I guess I said penis already, many of them do claim to want smaller government, as Mr. Molyneux says. However, they want a bigger military and they want more wars. So they want, you know, not universal health care and more options for education. And they want more billions of dollars spent toward U.S. foreign policy idiocy, which ironically is the major cause of, the major driving force behind globalism and the present migrant crisis that has been such an issue in Europe and in the U.S. So they want small government, except for the things that are, you know, the things that cause the very problems that Stefan Molyneux wants to use white males to solve.
Well, right, but they're being used as pawns, just as everybody else is in somebody else's foreign policy, because they want smaller government here, and they don't give a fuck where else it is.
Yeah. No, and their level of compassion for other humans is quite low, and if people who are outside of their tribe, at least it tends to be patriotism, nationalism. What did you say? What Mark Twain said? Give us the Mark Twain quote.
It's like it's either Mark Twain or Albert Einstein, one of the okay. two. Fucking oh yeah, people. Yeah. It's Einstein's nationalism is an infantile disease.
It is an infantile fucking. Disease. Most tribalism is an infantile disease. I kind of accept tribalism as a genetic part of human nature that might be something we just kind of always have and have to deal with. But what my experience as an anarchist has been is that you can, like, such tribalism can be redirected in ways that are beneficial instead of destructive. Like, you can form different sorts of tribes, you know, not in like an irrational way, but you can actually form tribes around ethics and rationality. Like, you can associate with certain groups of people and have a preference for them because they're more logically and ethically consistent people, and not because of their skin color, not because of their nationality or what group of rulers happen to be over them in a geographic region, but for things that are far more substantive. And maybe it's not necessary at all, but I am confident at the very least that even if it is a necessity of human existence and something we'll always have to deal with, that it can be put toward good use, really.
Right. Well, you know, tribalism requires tribalization, and it's not... Your tribe isn't inherent in any other way than your family.
Right.
But, you know, so tribalization can occur, and it can, you know, help to, you know, get people on board with a certain idea, a certain cultural zeitgeist, and, a certain type of living standard, a certain fucking, you know, understanding for other tribes. And I'm not saying that tribes are inherently bad. What I am saying is that tribalism has always been directed at separating people based on, you know, bullshit arbitrary factors like their race. And, you know, just saying Usually. That white, saying people, that people who come from our side of the tracks are good, decent human beings, and people who come from the other side of the tracks are the shit heels that we should ban. You know, the reason for all of our crime, the only people who rape our women, the only people who will accidentally shoot a gun that kills a girl. Yeah. You know, like the recent case with that I forget what her name was already, but like Jessica Steinle or something.
Yeah, or Katie Steinle or something like that.
Yeah,
I think it might be Katie. Yeah, like you're saying, anytime you remove the individuality from an individual, it's problematic. Anytime you collectivize a group of individuals and treat all individuals as if they are part of this other collective, you not only de-individualize them, well, you do that, but to de-individualize is to dehumanize the other person. You can't have these sorts of tribalist mentalities without demonizing humans. But you can, I think, form tribes based upon the valuing of the individuality of every person, which is, you know, in some ways what anarchists do, which is beautiful.
Well, and then, of course, you can, you know, split that over ideologies and make sure everybody feels represented. And then you've got agorists and, you know, ANCOMs and ANCAPs and fucking voluntarists and shit. And, like, all of these different factions of the same fundamental group of people who distrust authority.
Yes.
That's what I think is beautiful. But, you know... I'm obviously just in my naive state before I fucking accept the nation state as the beautiful and noble thing it is.
Yeah. Someday you'll grow up and learn to think more irrationally and ignore evidence of the way things function in the world and become more like our former ANCAP friend. All right, man. I've about had it. Any last points you want to make?
Sorry, any what?
Any last points you want to make? I'm running out of juice.
Nationalism is based on the idea that you can form a group better than they can form a group, and in doing so, you generally have the idea that your group should therefore be the one in charge. That leads to force, and the only way to change this is if your somehow noble white people brigade didn't turn into "we want to be the only people on the planet." And with all the nukes available, that's very, very unlikely. So I think that if anybody's utopian here, it's fucking Molyneux.
Agreed. Yes. We have, I think, still a fairly long journey ahead of us toward moving toward a free market society, but it's at least a realistic goal and something that can be maintained long term. As I've wrote about in the past, even it's once it gets functioning, it seems more than likely it's far more stable than a nation state. Because there is no longer a single point of failure. We have multiple options for protection and social stability. All right. Thanks for joining us today, y'all. I hope you have a good week. I hope you don't turn crazy. Try to get your brain checked out. No, avoid brain tumors. Eat healthy. Don't fall into statism. Okay. Peace.